When you're making that pot of soup, there's nothing like it. If you're in a bad mood and if you're cranky, if you don't feel well and all that, that soup won't come out as well. You know, the love has to get poured into it. The attention has to get poured into it.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And your soup knows that.
Welcome to Lunch with Shelley, the podcast featuring conversations with colleagues, friends, family, business leaders. At lunch, here's Shelley.
Doris Riz-Lacoste is an American chef, restaurateur, philanthropist, and community leader based in Washington, D.C. She has been a chef in D.C. for over three decades and is the owner of Riz, a great American bistro. As is often the case, and one of the reasons that I love living in this city, many people I have the privilege to meet have resumes so incredible you couldn't make them up if you tried. Riz's bio is completely emblematic of this. But since I have been counseled to make my intros briefer, thanks to many of you, including Nick, I'm going to share some incredible overall highlights and then we'll delve into the rest with Riz herself. Riz was born in New Bedford, Mass., the fifth of seven children, and began working at a Polish grocery store, Gorka's Market, at age 12. I wanted to highlight that simply because there was a large Polish community where I grew up, and that insight gave me fond memories. She also worked at a Friendly's when she was 16, and that fact provided me with fond Fribble memories, too. Riz was the valedictorian of her high school and then went to the University of Rochester to become a doctor, but then transferred to Berkeley with the hope of becoming a UN translator since apparently she speaks French, Spanish, and Latin. She graduated from Berkeley with a degree in French Lit, and then moved to Paris, where she studied French cuisine and earned a grand diplôme in French cooking. Then there's a lot of back and forth. She comes to the States and meets Chef Robert Kincaid, who has an incredible impact on her life moving forward, then goes back to France to join the Buddy Bombard Great French Balloon Adventure Team, then back to the U.S. to work with Chef Kincaid in Cambridge, Mass., and then at 21 Federal in Nantucket, and then moves with Chef to D.C. to open 21 Federal here. She continues to work with Kincaid until she becomes the executive chef at the beloved 1789. And then after 10 years and many, many accolades, she opens her own restaurant, Riz, which is where we are now and somewhat brings us up to date. Riz, the restaurant, serves lunch, thank God, dinner, private dining, and carryout, and features a seasonal American menu along with a roster of wines, local and international beers, and craft cocktails. As a tribute to her late mentor and friend, Riz includes at least one of Chef Kincaid's favorite dishes on her menu at all times. I hope he was a quiche fan, because yours is my absolute favorite, and this is the best quiche ever. Riz, you are an incredible person, and I'm only just getting to know you, so super thank you for being on the podcast, and let's have lunch.
Oh, let's have lunch, Shelley. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yes, so, my goodness, you are so interesting. We'll start off with the easy, which is sort of my norm, which is how you came to D.C., but really, prior to that, I want to ask you, how did you meet Chef Kincaid, and what was it about you that kept you two together for so long?
Great story. So I had come back from Paris. I was at La Varenne, still didn't know what I wanted to do. All of a sudden I went to a cooking school, and that wasn't my intent. And I was 25 years old. I really I had no idea.
Right.
You know, what I wanted to do with my life.
But you were a smart
I was smart and I worked. You know, I had a full-time job. I was president of my class. I was a valedictorian. You know, I do my homework, you know, from midnight to 3, you know, get up at 7. You know, I had to walk one block to school. So I was just always used to work at nonstop activity, know. So I came back. I loved what I did every day, and I never thought about tomorrow. You know, I was just involved in the day.
Oh, to be
so
young.
So much to do. Oh, yeah. To be young, you know. But so I just didn't know. So I'm coming back from Paris, and I said, okay, I'm back from Paris. I have a degree in French cooking. You know, what do I do? And my brother, Roger, my advisor, he just says, Riz, you have a degree in French cooking. Why don't you get a job in a restaurant, you know? And, you know, silly sounding, but true, you know. You just don't know. And so I said, no, you're right. You're right. I should. But that wasn't my intent. I'd worked in restaurants since I was, you know, 12, really, with
right.
food. And I had never planned that that was going to be my life. I loved every minute of it, but it never connected. So I, sure enough, I went to Boston to an employment agency. And there was an older couple. I wish I'd remember their name. And I could find it maybe somewhere. But I tell this story often enough. And they were just so lovely. And they're the ones. So I filled out this long application. And here I'm just back from Paris. Degree in French cooking.
Right.
You know, I mean, you don't get many of them very often.
Right. I'm hearkening just
through.
To the in-person employment
yeah.
agency
yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like a bygone era.
Yeah, and it was for restaurants, and that's they just employed people at restaurants. And so they sent me to a club, you know, like a members club, you know, a golf club kind of situation. And I went in and walked into the kitchen. I just didn't, you know, I didn't feel the vibe, you know, what I, again, didn't know what I wanted. So I went back and I said, you know, that didn't seem right. I said, do you have anything else? And they said, you know, well, we're going to send you to Bob Kincaid at the Harvest. Says he's not asking for anybody right now, but he always loves it. You know, when someone good passes through, you know, he wants to see
them. Oh, that's so cool.
So I went and we talked for over 2 hours. He had worked, had done a stage in Paris himself. And so we talked about that. But he hired me on the spot.
To be what?
To be, I was garde manger, you know, just starting at the bottom of the totem pole. And so I just ran the salad station. And I think ran or learned it or, you know, however. I mean, I don't know how long I was there. Less than a year. And I just started to go on the line. But he just loved... You know, I loved it. I was in heaven. And he loved it. And he, after 6 months, he told me, he says, Riz, cooking is innate. It's magic. It's, you have it or you don't. And he says, you have it. And he's always said, he's,
wow.
You're the finest palate I've ever met.
Wow.
And that was huge, you know.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know, I found my spot, you know. And so, anyway, I did my cold station stuff, which I still do to this day, and that was like my station. I think I was on the line for 2 days. The person who was the steward was leaving, and I said, Chef, I want that job. And he says, oh, you're too nice, you know. You can't do that job and everything. And he wanted me to share it with this guy, Stephen Donnelly, I think was his name. And so we did for a week. I think, and I think Bob just said no. I says, you know, it's really not a job that can be shared.
Right.
You know, it's a steward. You're doing all the ordering, all the prepping. You know, you're controlling the walk-ins. You know, and all of that stuff. There's just a lot going on, making all the soups, all the stocks, helping the butcher. Fabulous job, which I kept my entire time with him. You know, that was my job, and I loved every minute of it. You know, it was control, it was everything. It was, and it was helping the whole staff. It was guiding them through their day and making sure everything was there for them. It's really quite a great, it's the best job in the kitchen, in my opinion. But anyway, that being said, I only worked on the line for a couple of days, and I've never been a line cook.
Right.
And I've certainly done it over the many years that I've been cooking. But that was it. That's how I met him. And he told me those words. I stayed with him. I knew that I had my chef. And he was only 4 years older than me, but he was a chef and I was a rookie. And it was very clear, but very wonderful. He taught so many of us. We're still all big fans, all of us who worked. My best friends, some of my best friends of my life are those girls and folks that I worked at the Harvest with.
It's such a blessing.
Oh, it's an amazing life.
Yeah.
The kitchen life and restaurant life is so hard, but it's just so wonderful in so many ways, you know. So that we went to Nantucket after that.
Right. Well, 21 Federal
21
is
Federal.
Unbelievable. I've been there.
Yep, it's great.
Yeah, gorgeous
Chip
restaurant.
Walsh hired him and David Fine and Mike Maloney. Mike Maloney from D.C. hired all of those four men are all gone now, which is very sad but true. But anyway, they hired Bob. Bob took, you know, six or seven of us down. We all went. We were there for 3 years, and then one of the owners wanted to open a restaurant in D.C., so we opened up 21 Federal in D.C. three years later. So 12 of us came down from Nantucket to open up 21 Federal D.C. in December of 87. And I've been here since.
Well, Gosh. First, did you love Nantucket? Mm. I really like Nantucket. I mean, it's not my place, but it's just a wonderful place to be.
Oh, we loved it. I mean, again,
were you there year round?
We're there year round, you know. When we were kids, you know, we lived four or five of us in a house, you know, in the season. And the winter, we got to live in these beautiful homes, you know, because
wow.
people would be gone for the winter and they'd rent them. So that was great.
Yeah.
We were just such good friends. I mean, we worked together, we played together, you know, it was awesome, you know. It's such a beautiful to be at the beach.
Oh, my God, it's so pretty. You know. Do you ever read Ellen Hildebrand books? She writes all those
Nantucket
books.
Yeah, I've read a couple. I haven't read the whole series, all of them. But
they're such fast reads, but that's what it reminded me of. And a bunch of them are about restaurants.
It's island-like, especially when we left the island. You know, we took some of the people who came with us hadn't been off island in many, many years.
Wow.
You know? So it was just a whole different world. There is a world out there, so... It was kind of nice to get off, I have to say. And I've been back many times, although I'm so due back for a trip for a visit. I still have a lot of good friends there, so it's a very special place.
And the food scene is terrific.
It's terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, there are more per capita great restaurants on Nantucket than in a lot of places.
Probably.
It's really, really good.
Yeah, and I'm actually due for a visit, too. But so then you come to D.C., and... What? That was 87, you said?
Yep.
So 21 Federal opened at 87, and when did it close?
Closed January, just before inauguration, January 17th, I believe, 1993. So Clinton and was just coming into being.
Because I only vaguely remember it, but I also remember that it didn't do that well, because 21 Federal is a storied name, and I was even going to restaurants at that young of an age.
But the amazing thing was, I think it did tremendously. I mean, unfortunately, it had to close.
Right.
But it did tremendously well. I mean, it was the hottest thing in D.C. And it's still 21 Federal and Kincaid's, I think, are two are the most amazing restaurants the city has ever seen. And 21 Federal did an amazing job, but
when we opened,
it was on L Street between 18th and Connecticut.
Okay.
And it was a Verizon. There's a couple of restaurants after that, and it was a Verizon place. I think it's empty right now, the spot. I'm not sure. But I think what was important in restaurant life in D.C. is that then one restaurant opened a year, you know.
Right.
And you know, there were a handful of restaurants that were supporting the small dining clientele of D.C. We opened, I think New Heights had opened before us.
You're kidding.
And then a year later, maybe it was Eureka.
Right.
You know, and... right next door to Eureka was the steak restaurant. And there was Red Sage and all of that.
Yeah.
So I think that when we closed, it was because there was a small dining public, and then that small dining public had to go see the shiny new penny. So many restaurants opening. So that small dining public had to go and check all these places out, and the business just... was cut in half, really. You know, everybody... I mean, 21 Federal, which is so amazing, it was just these other restaurants are opening. So, and they... Whatever the funding, however, that was all financed. I'm not privy to that information.
Right.
But, you know, it makes a big difference, you know? And so we just had to close. And that was just so sad, because it was so great. But Kincaid's then was open for 22 or 25 years.
I remember going there very vividly.
We opened in September. Like, we closed in January.
It was packed.
And then opened in September. It was crazy.
Awesome bar.
Yeah. You know, we would do 300 lunches. I'd stop.
Yeah.
I was smoking at the time. I shouldn't say that. I would go and have a cigarette, a cup of coffee, and then just go back to work, expedite dinner. It was just, you know, just nonstop.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Tell me about when you first came to D.C., what you thought of the restaurant situation, which I guess you sort of described, and then how it's changed over the last 30 years, and you and I have been here for about the same time.
Yeah. No, it's been crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the big boom of, you know, 10 of so many restaurants opening? Where are we? When did, you know, it's hard. COVID has just kind of put a thing on everything. But that was 2020. And so I want to say it was like 2014, you know, in there where just the restaurants just, are opening, opening. It really hurt us, you know. It's like we're an older restaurant, you know, and have been around for a while, not new and not that shiny penny. Also, the dining public has changed. It's gotten younger, you know. It's not, people don't go out for the evening. Date night isn't necessarily going out to dinner on Saturday night. So Congress doesn't live in town anymore. They go home on Thursday. So you don't have that Thursday, Friday, you know, politico happy hour. So many things, you know, so many things have changed as far as levels of business that as a business owner, you just have to adjust, find new ways of revenue, find new ways to get things in. Because it really, really almost, you know, just before COVID is that it was our lowest point.
Really?
So COVID just kind of saved us, essentially, and you know, just leveled out the playing field a little bit, I think. And people came back, and they're saying, gee, I've forgotten how great this restaurant is. And we have been full since. And I think it's because everybody got off of their treadmill with COVID, and everybody just stopped doing what they did, and they just kind of reignited their restaurant scene, or they know that they can order out, and they know that, you know, it's just a different animal altogether. For a lot of us, and not everybody, maybe a lot of us is, you know, there's no bar scene, you know, as much, no happy hour because the offices are not full. People are working from home remotely. All of that has changed. Lunches is
I know.
Tough,
I feel,
you know,
like
what I mean?
This is really, you know, I mean, it's a very pro business. We're trying to be not only authentically joyful, but also helping out restaurants that do have lunch. At the risk of being macabre, like, what do you think you would have on your deathbed if your deathbed was a week long? I don't know.
Well, I always say cheeseburger and a gin is what I want.
That's
American
great.
American cheese, you know, good old, really delicious cheeseburger.
After all
cheeseburger
of your time in
great.
France,
oh, yeah.
American
oh,
cheese?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. nothing like it, you know. I mean, that's memory, that's childhood, that's, you know... I love it.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
I run the business now. I'm running, setting up all the events and everything. It's just, your life, you know, you just move up the ladder, I guess it's called, you know, I don't know. So I execute, I plan, my staff executes, the kitchen executes beautifully. I'm still the chef. And the front of the house executes beautifully. So I do all the logistics. Every detail is planned, and then they execute as stated, you know. So it's a different part of the business. I like it. It's consuming. It's really intense, you know. I sit at a desk all day practically.
And really?
So that's why I go out and do my deliveries. I get out 4 o'clock. I get out of the house and get
it's
in my
good.
Van and. And go do deliveries. So
that's part of the thing. One of the many aspects that I like so much about lunch, because you get out of the office. So in your case, it's the same thing as getting out of the office.
Yeah.
And Susan Holt, back to Susan, she gave me such a good analogy when I was talking to her about cooking, because it's sort of like anything. I mean, her husband is a lawyer, but he doesn't go home and, you know, want to read caseloads. So when you come home, I guess you don't want to cook because, it's fun, but it's work.
Right. I think cooking is one of those things that people really do love. A lawyer will love it. It will be an escape. My brother is a dentist, and he loves to cook. And it's an escape, you know, because it takes all of your attention.
Right.
As anything that you do, when you do well, does, you know.
Right.
But it's the conversation that you have with food when you're a good cook, you know. You're watching everything. You're watching the flavors meld. You're talking to the food. You're listening to the food, and it takes it all. So it totally takes you away from your day, you know,
so
from the rest
not
of
me.
What you're doing.
Right. If you like to cook, I'm sure that's true.
And when it's a job, it is a bit different. But still, when you're making that pot of soup, there's nothing like it. You know, if you're in a bad mood and if you're cranky, if you don't feel well and all that, that soup won't come out as well. You know, the love has to get poured into it. The attention has to get poured
so
into
interesting.
It, and your soup knows that, you know, and so it it's very, very fascinating. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of attention has to be put into it to do it well. You know, we used to laugh. We used to call it Gazinta soup. And sometimes, you know, I'd be in my walk-in and I'd be collecting things. And I says, oh, I have some leftover braised endive, but I'm making my wild rice and duck soup. That'll be perfect, you know, in there. That'll be a great addition, you know, to puree it and put it in as part of the liquid and all of that. And I know one time I just went too wacky on all of my, we called it Gazinta soup, you know, and making a batch of soup.
What does that mean?
Goes into, Gazinta means everything, everything you throw in and make
funny.
A pot of soup. I would say, no, this did not work, and I don't think I ever did that again. You know, maybe I did in small doses, you know. But
oh God,
you have to really pay
that.
Attention. You can't wing it, you know. You can't wing it, you know. And, you know.
Aren't you supposed to wing it? I thought the total opposite.
What?
I mean, if you're in a good mood and you're just...
Oh, well,
it's
depending on what you call winging
right.
it. You know what I mean? Yes, if you're... Right, we cook without recipes,
right,
is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just make
or
it happen.
You play.
You know?
My mother just plays. Yeah. And she's terrible to repeat a recipe for, because I'm like, Mom, how do you make this? And she's like, well...
It's a different...
Know, yeah.
It's different every time.
But, you said that you either have it or you don't, or Chef Kincaid said that. I just don't. But to your point about loving things, have you ever been to Bernardin in Manhattan?
I have.
And, you know, there were two brother owners. And anyway, my parents were very friendly with the one who was most recently there. I think we were there in 2020. But do you remember the floral arrangements there are beyond control?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he gives them love, and he sometimes blows really good cigar smoke at them.
Well, they want that.
Exactly. He talks to them.
Yeah, yeah.
He blows cigars. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's what they want. That's why you have to talk to your
plants.
But
you have to talk to your plant.
Yeah. You have to talk to your food.
Yeah. I just talk to my dog and my husband.
Well, I'm sure your dog loves that.
Liberty.
Your dog needs that love.
Yes.
You know, love gives you unrequited love. You
God.
You need to return it.
Oh, I'm so into Jerry.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
The spas and all that are cool.
Well, no TV.
No.
No alcohol.
You
it's
read,
very
which
zen.
Would be my, which would be my pastime if I had one, would be to read. You know,
really?
I would go on vacations with 10 books.
Really?
That way I get to pick. And I'd read at least two or three because I would just read nonstop. It's so, I love it, love it, love it, love it.
It's luxurious.
Escape,
yeah.
And it's luxurious.
Yeah.
I don't have the luxury of time to, and you know, even at night to read two pages, you just can't even get into the cadence.
My God, I know. And that's what I do. I 10 page my life away unless I'm on a plane or something. But, you know, that's such a fun topic because luxury is defined so differently for each of us. Yeah. And actually, I am learning what my luxury is. I mean, my luxuries are overt, but what your real luxuries are is a whole different thing. You know, how to treat yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I'll ask you this because of books. So Ina Gardner was on the Today Show this morning because she's done her memoir.
Oh.
So any interest?
In what, writing a memoir?
Yeah.
My secrets are my secrets. They will stay that way. What happens in Riss's life stays in Riss's life.
I like it.
I don't think so. I do want to write a cookbook, and I just haven't had the minute. It takes a minute to write a cookbook. I helped Bob write his and not write it, test his recipes. And so I don't know everything involved, but I'm beginning to make that look. I know the title, and I know I want to do, I think, since we just came from this French-Canadian background where food was love, you know, food's so important.
Right. Well,
you want to bring that
I'm
in.
I'm Jewish. It's the same thing.
Yeah. You want to just educate people. You want it. I don't know the language of the book yet, you know, so
what would the title be, or you don't want to give it up?
Oh.
What?
I can give you the title.
Oh,
I
good.
Love it. So my father had died of Parkinson's, and he had Lewy body disease, so he had dementia, you know, and he was not himself. I mean, he didn't recognize any of us. He just lost his mind for a good a long time, 5 years maybe, trying
That's a
to
shame.
Think, maybe. 5 years, I think, that really from, you know, initial things, like he'd see me in the living room, and I'd visit from Washington, and he goes, you know, just who are you? I says, ah, you know, I'm Rissy, you know. He says, oh, my God, I have a daughter, Rissy, who lives in Washington. And it's just so sad, yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah. Then he kind of shake out of it, and, oh, my God, it's you, you
right.
know, and all of that. So it just slowly progressed. But anyway, something had happened that caused my mother brought him to the hospital, and I would go up every weekend to see him.
Wow.
And then, because we were always hoping that he would recognize us, you know, just hoping that you'd be able to say goodbye, hoping, you know, and so he was in the hospital. So I was in the hospital with just him and me, and my mother was talking to the counselor, you know, to like, we're going to bring him home to die, you know, but he was awake and he was eating the spinach, pureed spinach. So he was on pureed foods at that point, and he was eating the spinach, and this was so beautiful. I mean, just so beautiful. He looks to my mother, has no idea who she is, but knows who she is, you know what I mean, inside, yeah. Because he goes, he's eating stupid, awful, you know, hospital creamed spinach. And he looks at my mother and he goes, lady, you sure are a good cook. Oh, my God. I was, like, so thrilled that I was there to hear that. And it said everything to me as a chef, as a cook, you know, that my mother was a great cook. And she made 3 hot meals a day for him and for 7 kids. And my father was a great eater. He would just love every bite. You could see it watching when he ate, you know. And he would eat this first, you know, he's one of those that
like me,
put it all up on a fork. He would eat the sweet potato puree, he would eat the duck, he would eat whatever, all in parts. And he loved everything that she made for him. And she was such a devoted wife and mother. And but it said everything. It said the appreciation, you know, for a cook, because when you cook for people, you want to be appreciated, you know, and that he loved her food and he loved to eat. And I think that's like perfect title
for a
cookbook.
It is, and it's so classy and like sort of Bogart-ish, you know, lady.
Yeah, exactly. Lady, you sure are a good cook. Oh, my God, that's exactly how he said it.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. That could be the title,
So I don't
too.
Know them, you know, because I would like to do a restaurant book,
yeah,
but it can still be, you know, aka Riss, you know.
Well, my God,
I mean, I don't know how many books I'm going to write, so I have to put it all in one. But
I thought this podcast was actually going to be a book. I have yet to write a book too, but apparently it's in my future.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Speaking of great cooks, is Julia Child maybe your favorite cook, or clearly someone that you admire? Tell us about that and cooking her meal and the documentary that ensued.
She's certainly one of my favorites. She, you know, I met her in Paris, and Simone Beck. And I didn't meet Louisette Bertholle. I did not meet her, but there were the 3 who did master in the art of French cooking. And it was funny because Julia, I met her in Paris, and then I came home, and then I went back to France for the Buddy Bombard hot air balloon.
Yes, that's the next thing we're going to talk about.
Hot air balloon gig, and she and her husband Paul came on. She and her husband Paul were at my graduation from Loverin.
You're kidding.
And then
Invited by you?
Invited by Ann Willen.
Oh, okay.
They were friends. And then... you know, next year, whatever, when I was back in Burgundy, she and her husband came for a hot air balloon trip.
You're kidding.
So we all went out. So I was the sous chef. My good friend Bob Chambers was the chef. So Bob and me and then the hot air balloon team, you know, a bunch of great Brits, you know, we're all young kids.
Right.
Great Brits, you know, were there, and they were the ones who, well, was the pilot and then the people who, you know, commandeered the balloon and landed it and all of that. So we all went to this little cafe, like maybe 8 of us or something, sitting this in bone, you know, just in the beautiful, in the Côte d'Or, you know, I mean, Chasson Marache and you know, all those beautiful little villages.
Yeah.
So we're here having dinner together. And so we had that experience. And then when I went came back to the States, I started working with Bob at the Harvest. Well, it was like, you know, right around the corner from where she lived on Irving Street in Cambridge.
Oh, right.
So she used to come to Harvest all the time. So I always made sure to go out and say hi, just because it's remember me, you know,
right.
Remember the balloons, you know, remember, you know, with Ann Willen. And she had the most amazing memory and the most amazing, just gentle, sweet soul ability to remember you and to say, oh, my God.
That's a talent,
know,
by
mean,
the way.
It is. Yeah. It's huge, because she would do that time and time again.
My
not just
son
with
has
me,
that, yeah.
But I saw her with everybody. She would remember. She'd bring up, you know, well, how's so-and-so or how's so-and-so? So I always said hi. And then I went. We went to Nantucket, and so the Morashes, Russell and Marion Morash, did work for Russell worked for WGBH, and they produced her French Chef TV show. And they had a restaurant, Straight Wharf, in Nantucket.
Oh yeah!
And so she used to come down and usually spend a week with them or something. So she would come to 21 Federal. And I said, hi, Julia, how are you, you know, and all that stuff, and blah, 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 Bob, you know, we then got to know Bob Kincaid and in the mix.
God, this is so amazing.
So just kind of following the path, and then when we came to Washington, Bob was asked to be on the board of the American Institute of Wine and Food, which Julia started in the early 80s. I mean, when I was at Paris, I used to write letters at the very beginning creation of it. And so we had a chapter in D.C., and they asked Bob to be on the board, and he was not the board member type.
So he
just said, Riz, will you go to that meeting? You know, it was at the Hay Adams Hotel. Go to that meeting and just go for me. You know, just go and do it. You know, and, yes, chef. So I went and did it, and I was a member of the board. I think it was chairman of the local chapter at one point. But then that brought me to going to the national board meetings all the time of AIWF, and Julia was always there. So I just got to know her.
Yeah.
Been out to dinner with her many times, been to her house,
Goodness.
Slept in her bed. You know, all
You're
of that
kidding.
Stuff. When she was at, I got was good friends with her assistant, Stephanie Hirsch, and all of that stuff, you know, and got to know her family. And so when we were opening up her kitchen at the Smithsonian, which AIWF really helped to work with,
right.
Which some of the stuff went, most of it went to the Smithsonian, some went to Napa. But I raised my hand at the board meeting in San Francisco, and I says, I want Julia when she comes to town. And so we did her birthday dinner there. And a friend, you know, a friend who worked for Meet the Press, Michelle Giacconi and Bob Vanas, they said, we're going to film this. And so we filmed the whole dinner and all of that, and created Cooking for Julia.
It's amazing.
So it was very cool.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Tell us about Buddy Bombard.
Oh, that was great.
It's so cool.
It was great.
Tell everybody who he was, or is. He's alive, right?
I don't know.
It seems like
many years. I mean, that was, you know, what, 83, so it's been a long time. And it was based in Virginia, the Great French Balloon Adventure, it was called. I don't know him at all, really.
Oh, okay.
I worked with Bob Chambers was the chef, and he's a good friend, and I worked with him. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about Buddy Bombard, because he is
Well, he was an
here.
Adventurer.
Who was it? You tell me. Yeah.
Well, he was an adventurer, and I can't remember, but he took over. He went to Dartmouth, and he did something, but the story of his life begins with his mother, as often these stories do. And his mother sat him down and said, Buddy, don't have an ordinary life.
Yeah.
And so years later, he takes over some club that seems to be some sort of fancy club. I can't for the life of me remember where it was. But he turns the club into a super fun, adventurous club. And he starts bringing all the club members to fantastic skiing trips and food trips and all of this stuff. And so the club becomes very popular, and it becomes sort of like a travel destination-esque club. I mean, I think they did safari and all this stuff. Then at some point he gets into ballooning.
Yeah.
And then he has all of these fantastic friends, like princes and princesses all over Europe. And he does this whole ballooning thing, and then he races the balloons. That part I couldn't really tell, because I've only been in a balloon.
I know, he was, when I worked for them, we were just in Bone and Soulier, so we were in Burgundy, and we would, you know, every Wednesday we would move. Wednesday to Tuesday would be like in Bone, so we'd have the weekends in, you know, each place. And then we'd go to Sawyer. Then we'd go back to Beaune, and we stayed in the chateau.
So you cook for the people that are part of the adventure?
That paid for the adventure. And they would go on a trip every day, either at sunrise or sunset. And we would then have a meal for them. So maybe the morning ones, they would go to a restaurant for a nice lunch or something, and then come back to the chateau wherever they were staying, and we would have a dinner at the chateau, or else we would go out in the cornfield or wherever and put out a spread, you know, where they were landing,
and
we
do
the balloon chase, which was so much fun.
Really?
Driving around the Côte d'Or was so much fun.
To catch the balloon to be there when it landed so that you could cook for them?
No, we had all the food. We would have the food in the truck, or we'd just get to go out with the chasers because that was just so much fun. And then watch them land that balloon. Then we'd have champagne, and we would, we would have a toast, together.
That's
and stuff.
So awesome.
So it was really a great, wonderful life. But I think they moved, Buddy Bumble, the Great French Balloon Adventure moved, I believe, to Austria, a couple of other countries, Anyway,
it seemed very France heavy when I looked it up.
It was.
But so that was a year of your life.
That was a great year. That was what year
Super
of that?
Cool.
That was
I don't know.
That was 6 months I was there.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
Well, and here's another one. This might be easy. If you were going to have lunch anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would you be having? Not the same thing. Well, I will close by thanking you profusely. I have been really, really looking forward to sitting down with you. You are fascinating and wonderful and so accomplished and absolutely delightful to dine with.
Oh, isn't that nice?
So
thank
please
you,
do
Shelley.
It again.
Oh, please.
I hope, listeners, that you have enjoyed this lunch as much as we did. Check out other episodes at www.lunchwithshelley.com when you have a chance. Thank you again, Riz. Thank you, Cleavon. Thank you, Allie. And everybody, in the meantime, peace, love, and lunch.
Thank you very much.